Introduction. The evolution of biofeedback is a rich and interdisciplinary narrative that spans ancient traditions, modern physiological science, and radical shifts in psychological paradigms. This historical overview begins by identifying key contributors who established biofeedback as a formal discipline and traces its philosophical and empirical antecedents. It then explores the theoretical underpinnings provided by cybernetics and operant conditioning, which position feedback systems as viable learning tools for self-regulation. The narrative continues by examining landmark studies that shattered the dogma of autonomic immutability, opening new avenues for behavioral control of physiological processes. Biofeedback's divergence into multiple clinical and research domains, such as incontinence, brain activity, skin conductance, muscle control, cardiovascular function, and pain management, demonstrates its adaptability and therapeutic potential. The essay concludes with an integrative reflection on the field's trajectory, noting key milestones and institutional developments that have shaped its current form. Through this comprehensive synthesis, we recognize the persistent influence of individual innovators, scientific revolutions, and organizational leadership in crafting biofeedback's dynamic history. History. The formal emergence of biofeedback as a scientific discipline was catalyzed in 1969 at a seminal meeting held at the Surfrider Inn in Santa Monica, California, spearheaded by Barbara Brown, a Veterans Administration EEG researcher. This meeting marked a defining moment when researchers exploring physiological self-regulation and practitioners of ancient contemplative traditions found common ground. The term biofeedback was officially adopted, and the Biofeedback Research Society, BRS, was established, providing a structured forum for interdisciplinary collaboration. Barbara Brown's assertive leadership helped establish biofeedback's visibility in both scientific and public circles, framing it not merely as a curiosity, but as a viable method of applied psychophysiology. Eric Pieper's role was especially vital in weaving together fragmented disciplinary efforts into a cohesive field through international lecturing, mentorship, and academic publication. His work helped lay the foundation for educational curricula and professional training programs that proliferated globally. The 1969 meeting was not just the birth of a professional organization. It represented the moment biofeedback was recognized as a unified field, bridging empirical research and millennial-old self-regulation practices. This historical moment also solidified the field's identity in opposition to traditional biomedical models that dismissed the possibility of voluntary autonomic control. It marked the start of a cultural and scientific shift that opened new pathways for research, therapeutic innovation, and personal empowerment through physiological self-awareness. Early antecedents. The conceptual origins of biofeedback can be traced back to ancient systems of self-regulation that predate the scientific method by thousands of years. Among these, the yogic traditions of India, which emerged nearly 5,000 years ago, are perhaps the most well-documented examples of structured, volitional control over physiological processes such as breath, heart rate, and temperature. These early systems reflected an intuitive grasp of internal regulation that would only be empirically validated much later. In the 19th century, Claude Bernard's theory of the milieu intérieur introduced the idea that biological systems maintain internal stability, a precursor to the homeostasis model later advanced by Walter Cannon. Cannon expanded this model by exploring the physiological basis of stress, identifying it as a force that disrupts equilibrium, and thereby framing homeostasis as an active, dynamic process. Janos Hugo Bruno Hans Selye extended this trajectory with his general adaptation syndrome, describing how chronic stress produces a cascade of endocrine responses that can ultimately lead to disease. Meanwhile, inventors and physiologists such as Alexander Graham Bell, Ivan Tarchinov, and J.H. Baer conducted experiments suggesting that both sensory and autonomic functions could be voluntarily modulated. Bell's work on translating acoustic signals into visual representations laid the groundwork for modern feedback mechanisms. Tarchinov's demonstration that heart rate could be influenced voluntarily, and Baer's work on learning to control the retrohens muscle of the ear, were early experimental validations of self-regulation. Collectively, These early contributions provided the philosophical and empirical scaffolding for what would eventually become the biofeedback movement. Cybernetic theory. The introduction of cybernetic theory by Norbert Wiener in 1948 provided the conceptual backbone that allowed biofeedback to evolve from a collection of disparate observations into a formalized discipline. Wiener defined cybernetics as the science of control and communication in animals and machines, emphasizing the importance of feedback loops in maintaining system stability. This theory was revolutionary because it redefined control as an outcome of monitoring outputs and adjusting inputs in response, a perfect analog for how biofeedback operates. In a cybernetic system, a variable is maintained around a set point by detecting deviations and implementing corrective actions. These principles were readily applied to biological systems. Heart rate, muscle tension, or skin temperature could be monitored, deviations from the desired state identified, and feedback provided to guide corrective action. The cybernetic model offered both a philosophical justification and an operational framework for understanding biofeedback as a form of behavioral self-regulation. At the 1969 Surfrider In meeting, the participants adopted the term biofeedback, a fusion of biological regulation and cybernetic feedback. The alternative term autoregulation was rejected in part due to its unintended connotation with government control, underscoring how cultural perception can influence scientific terminology. Cybernetic theory did more than lend credibility. It unified diverse physiological domains under a single framework that emphasized systems thinking, recursive regulation, and adaptive control. This helped biofeedback gain acceptance in fields as diverse as medicine, psychology, rehabilitation, and education. Brain research. Brain research represents one of the most advanced and conceptually rich domains within biofeedback, particularly through the development of electroencephalographic, e.g., biofeedback, also known as neurofeedback. The historical foundations of this work are rooted in early observations by Richard Codone and Adolf Beck, who recorded electrical brain potentials in animals. Hans Berger's work in the 1920s marked a paradigm shift by recording the first human EEG and identifying rhythmic oscillations such as alpha and beta waves, linking these rhythms to changes in consciousness. Berger's contributions not only validated the idea that the brain's electrical activity could be systematically observed, but also laid the groundwork for its modulation through learning. In the 1960s, Joe Kamiya provided compelling evidence that participants could discriminate and increase their alpha activity using auditory feedback. His experiments suggested that individuals could be trained to enter specific mental states associated with altered EEG patterns. Kamiya's findings, widely disseminated in public and academic venues, contributed to the perception that EEG feedback could provide access to meditative or calm awareness states. Barbara Brown and the Greens at the Menninger Foundation further expanded neurofeedback applications by developing alpha-theta protocols, which became widely used in clinical and personal growth settings. Research by Barry Sturman and Joel Luber demonstrated that specific EEG patterns, such as the sensorimotor rhythm, SMR, could be trained to reduce seizures in epilepsy and improve attention in ADHD. These studies demonstrated that neurofeedback could induce long-lasting changes in brain function and behavior. Neurofeedback thus transitioned from an experimental curiosity to a therapeutic modality supported by peer-reviewed studies, comprehensive clinical protocols, and increasingly sophisticated equipment. Electrodermal research. Electrodermal research, focused on measuring and modulating skin conductance, has contributed a foundational physiological marker for emotional and arousal states. The earliest developments were made by Ivan Tarchinov and Charles Fear, who established the endosomatic and exosomatic methods of measuring skin resistance, respectively. Tarchinov's method involved recording natural voltage differences across the skin, while Fear applied a small current to assess changes in conductivity. These early methods set the stage for galvanic skin response, GSR, measurements, which gained popularity in psychological testing and lie detection. Carl Jung and F. Peterson adapted GSR in their word association tests to infer unconscious emotional responses, marking one of the first uses of electrodermal data in applied psychology. In the 20th century, Marjorie and Herschel Tumim were pivotal in incorporating GSR biofeedback into psychotherapy. They used feedback to help patients become aware of emotional triggers and taught them to downregulate arousal, enhancing emotional resilience and insight. GSR biofeedback became a staple in stress management programs and was often combined with relaxation training or cognitive behavioral interventions. The method's simplicity, non-invasiveness, and immediate responsiveness made it a practical tool for both clinical and educational environments. While it does not provide as specific physiological data as EEG or EMG, electrodermal feedback remains a powerful indicator of sympathetic nervous system activity and an effective entry point for clients new to self-regulation training. It is especially useful in populations with heightened arousal or anxiety, offering a reliable and accessible way to build self-awareness and control. Electromyographic research. Electromyographic, EMG, biofeedback has served as one of the most direct and effective applications of self-regulation training, focusing on voluntary control over skeletal muscle tension. The technique records the electrical activity generated by motor units, which comprise a motor neuron and the muscle fibers it innervates, and translates this activity into visual or auditory feedback. Edmund Jacobson pioneered this field by showing that even imagined actions or thoughts could produce measurable changes in muscle activity. His work led to the development of progressive relaxation, a method that remains foundational in stress reduction and psychosomatic medicine. John Basmagian advanced EMG biofeedback by demonstrating that individuals could control single motor units, a finding with profound implications for neuromuscular rehabilitation. His single motor unit training, SMUT, study showed that participants could learn to recruit or suppress specific muscle fibers with remarkable precision. Alberto Marinacci and George Watmore extended EMG biofeedback into clinical domains, treating conditions such as Bell's palsy, polio, and chronic headaches. They introduced the concept of dyspinesis, misplaced effort, as a cause of functional disorders, and showed that retraining muscle activity could alleviate symptoms. Despite their empirical success, the findings were initially marginalized due to prevailing medical models that discounted the behavioral contributions to disease. Jeff Cram contributed further by developing dynamic EMG assessment protocols and mapping muscle tension patterns associated with chronic pain. His research into asymmetry and muscle scanning remains a touchstone in ergonomic assessment and biofeedback training. More recently, researchers such as Stephen Wolf and Edward Taub have integrated EMG biofeedback into stroke and spinal cord injury rehabilitation, demonstrating the recovery of motor function through targeted, feedback-guided practice. EMG biofeedback continues to evolve with the integration of wireless sensors and real-time analytics, providing a powerful platform for personalized motor retraining and functional recovery. Cardiovascular research. Biofeedback interventions targeting the cardiovascular system have shown compelling efficacy in treating conditions such as hypertension, cardiac arrhythmias, and stress-related disorders. D.W. Schoen's early work demonstrated that even minor heart rate increases could be operantly trained in laboratory settings, suggesting that the heart was not entirely outside voluntary influence. More dramatic examples emerged from demonstrations by Swami Rama, who produced atrial flutter in a controlled setting, and from studies by Engel and Chisholm, who trained patients to initiate and then suppress premature ventricular contractions. These studies validated the concept of illness onset training, teaching patients to induce and resolve symptoms voluntarily. Autogenic training, developed by Johannes Schultz and later expanded by Wolfgang Luth, offered a structured method for calming the autonomic nervous system through a series of mental exercises and passive volition, often paired with imagery and thermal feedback. At the Menninger Foundation, comprehensive treatment protocols combined autogenic training, EMG, and hand-warming techniques to successfully manage hypertension. Steve Farian and colleagues reported that nearly 90% of hypertensive patients in their program reduced or discontinued medication following biofeedback treatment. Robert Friedman clarified the underlying mechanisms of thermal biofeedback by distinguishing between beta-adrenergic, hormonal, control of hand warming, and alpha-adrenergic, neural, control of hand cooling. This nuanced understanding enabled the development of more precise training protocols. In the 1980s, Russian researchers such as Vashchilo initiated HRV biofeedback studies with cosmonauts, and Paul Lehrer later applied these protocols to asthma, demonstrating clinically meaningful improvements. Richard Gewirtz and colleagues extended HRV biofeedback into pediatric pain, irritable bowel syndrome, and other functional somatic disorders, solidifying it as a scientifically grounded and clinically versatile approach. HRV biofeedback now plays a central role in behavioral cardiology, offering an accessible and non-invasive method to enhance vagal tone, stress resilience, and emotional regulation. Pain research. Among the most widely validated applications of biofeedback is its use in managing acute and chronic pain. Early research by Thomas Bijinski and Johann Stoiber established that EMG biofeedback could significantly reduce tension in the frontalis muscle, providing effective treatment for tension-type headaches. They demonstrated that both analog and binary feedback formats were effective in reducing EMG levels and the frequency of headaches. Importantly, they emphasized the necessity of transferring biofeedback skills from the clinic to everyday life through home practice, a critical insight that has shaped modern behavioral medicine. Their research laid the groundwork for standardized biofeedback protocols and headache management and informed later clinical guidelines. The Menninger Foundation's work extended these findings to migraine treatment using hand warming and autogenic biofeedback, despite methodological limitations such as the absence of control groups. Hertafluor's groundbreaking work on phantom limb pain demonstrated that operant training could induce cortical reorganization, reducing pain in amputees. These findings highlighted the central role of neuroplasticity in pain perception, opening new avenues for non-pharmacological pain management. David Hubbard and Richard Gewirtz proposed a mechanism linking sympathetic innervation of muscle spindles to trigger points, suggesting that biofeedback could modulate pain through downregulation of autonomic arousal. Additional research has supported the use of biofeedback for fibromyalgia, temporomandibular disorders, and complex regional pain syndrome. Pain-related biofeedback interventions often integrate multiple modalities, such as EMG, thermal, HRV, and respiration, to address the multifaceted nature of chronic pain. The efficacy of these interventions lies not only in symptom relief, but also in empowering patients to take an active role in managing their condition, thereby reducing their reliance on medications and enhancing their quality of life. Biofeedback's contribution to pain medicine exemplifies its broader value as a self-regulation technology grounded in empirical science and adaptable to the complex needs of humans. Operant conditioning. The integration of operant conditioning principles into biofeedback transformed it from a set of physiological curiosities into a structured learning process. Edward Thorndike's law of effect established that behaviors followed by satisfying consequences are more likely to be repeated. B.F. Skinner developed this concept into a comprehensive theory of operant behavior, emphasizing the role of reinforcement and punishment as mechanisms for behavioral modification. Reinforcement increases the probability of a behavior's recurrence, while punishment decreases it. Skinner's experiments with animals showed that even complex behaviors could be shaped incrementally through successive reinforcement, a principle directly applicable to biofeedback. In biofeedback, the physiological response, such as a drop in muscle tension or a shift in EEG frequency, becomes the target behavior, and visual or auditory feedback serves as the reinforcer. One major theoretical and clinical obstacle was the long-standing belief that autonomic functions were involuntary and thus impervious to operant shaping. Researchers such as Kimball maintained that while skeletal muscles could be trained, functions like heart rate could not. However, this rigid dichotomy was challenged by experimental data showing that autonomic responses could indeed be conditioned. The application of operant theory to biofeedback redefined involuntary as not yet voluntarily controlled, expanding the boundaries of behavioral science. Furthermore, it helped clarify the distinction between classical and operant conditioning within physiological training, allowing researchers to isolate the role of contingency, reinforcement schedules, and voluntary intent in biofeedback protocols. Studies demonstrating voluntary autonomic control. Experimental studies that demonstrated voluntary control over autonomic functions were pivotal in legitimizing biofeedback within the scientific community. The prevailing belief had been that functions such as heart rate, blood pressure, and skin temperature were outside conscious influence. However, a series of groundbreaking studies beginning in the mid-20th century dismantled this notion. For example, Lapides and colleagues trained participants to modulate urination, and Lisina used classical and operant conditioning to teach blood vessel control, enabling subjects to voluntarily raise their skin temperature. Kimmel showed that participants could be trained to produce sweat on command, as measured by the galvanic skin response. The most influential work was conducted by Neil Miller and Leo DiCora, who used Karari to paralyze rats, ensuring that no skeletal movement could influence outcomes. Despite this paralysis, the rats learned to modulate autonomic functions such as heart rate and blood flow through operant conditioning using brain stimulation as reinforcement. These results were a turning point. They directly contradicted the dogma that autonomic systems could not be volitionally influenced, spurred major funding from the National Institute of Mental Health, and paved the way for clinical research in humans. Later work by Bernard Brucker showed that quadriplegic patients could also learn to increase blood pressure without skeletal involvement, reinforcing the findings in human populations. These studies not only advanced a new scientific understanding, but also expanded the therapeutic horizon for individuals with autonomic dysregulation, supporting the development of clinical biofeedback interventions for a range of conditions previously thought to be untreatable by behavioral methods. Divergent movements in biofeedback. Following the establishment of core principles, the field of biofeedback diversified into multiple subdisciplines, each characterized by different physiological targets and clinical applications. Initially, the focus was on proving the possibility of autonomic control. But as evidence accumulated, researchers and clinicians began to apply biofeedback to real-world problems across many domains, including urology, neurology, psychology, cardiology, and rehabilitation medicine. Each of these strands developed somewhat independently, informed by the research traditions and methodologies of their respective fields. This diversification enriched the biofeedback discipline by generating new instruments, protocols, and models of learning and adaptation. At the same time, it created a need for shared standards, language, and certification processes, needs that were addressed through professional societies and formalized training programs. Despite differences in technique and terminology, all these movements shared a unifying principle: that real-time physiological feedback could enable individuals to learn voluntary control over processes typically governed unconsciously. Importantly, many of these applications found empirical support and clinical validation, allowing biofeedback to move beyond its experimental origins into the realm of applied psychophysiology. The diverging paths eventually reconverged through interdisciplinary collaboration, helping to unify the field under an overarching framework of self-regulation. This pluralism of approaches continues to define biofeedback as a flexible, evidence-based, and integrative practice. Incontinence. One of the earliest and most successful clinical applications of biofeedback was the treatment of urinary and anal incontinence. These conditions, often stigmatized and underreported, found effective, non-invasive solutions through biofeedback-assisted pelvic floor training. Orville Moore's work with bedwetting alarms in children demonstrated the power of classical conditioning in teaching the association between bladder fullness and waking. His system trained children to anticipate urination and engage the urinary sphincter before involuntary leakage occurred. Arnold Kegel later developed the perineometer, which provided internal feedback on pelvic floor muscle strength and was used in conjunction with exercises to restore continence in women postpartum. This device was an early example of biofeedback instrumentation being applied in a clinical context. By providing real-time data on muscular engagement, it allowed patients to learn and refine control over bodily processes that are not typically consciously monitored. William Whitehead's studies extended these principles to the treatment of anal incontinence, showing significant improvement in symptoms and quality of life. These findings were so robust that in 1992, the U.S. Agency for Healthcare Policy and Research recognized biofeedback as a first-line treatment for adult urinary incontinence. This legitimization by a federal agency was a landmark moment for biofeedback, indicating not only its efficacy, but also its potential for integration into standard medical care. The success of incontinence treatment demonstrated the viability of biofeedback as a behavioral medicine tool, opening the door for its application to a broader range of somatic disorders. Biofeedback timeline. The historical trajectory of biofeedback has been punctuated by significant institutional, technological, and conceptual milestones that have shaped its identity as both a scientific field and a clinical practice. The 1962 publication of Muscles Alive by John Basmagian and Carlo De Luca marked the beginning of biofeedback's entry into neuromuscular research. In 1965, David Shapiro initiated the first academic psychophysiology course at Harvard, legitimizing the field in university curricula. The first Veterans Administration meeting on biofeedback in 1968 set the stage for the formation of the Biofeedback Research Society, BRS, in 1969 at the Surfrider Inn, a pivotal moment for the field. The same year saw the Conference on Altered States of Consciousness in Kansas, highlighting the intersection of scientific inquiry and consciousness studies. Throughout the 1970s, key publications, such as Beyond Biofeedback by the Greens and Biofeedback, Principles and Practice for Clinicians by Basmagian, brought the field to a wider audience. The founding of the Biofeedback Society of America, BSA, in 1976 formalized professional organization and certification. In 1980, the Biofeedback Certification Institute of America, BCA, was created to establish credentialing standards. The 1990s saw the establishment of the Society for the Study of Neuronal Regulation, which later evolved into ISNR, marking the emergence of neurofeedback as a specialized field. The 2000s and 2010s witnessed a consolidation of standards and definitions across organizations such as APB, ISNR, and BCIA, resulting in shared ethical codes and best practices. Recent years have emphasized virtual education, interdisciplinary collaboration, and the publication of key texts, such as Evidence-Based Practice in Biofeedback and Neurofeedback. Figures such as Francine Butler, Judy Crawford, Richard Gewirtz, Ina Kazan, Paul Lehrer, Donald Moss, Eric Pieper, and Fred Schaefer have been instrumental in guiding institutional leadership, advocating for training standards, and ensuring the global relevance of biofeedback. The timeline highlights not only the field's maturation, but also its resilience and adaptability in response to emerging scientific knowledge, evolving clinical needs, and shifting societal demands.